from meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. We have a busy night ahead of us tonight. One thing that I didn't see or hear much of during the past presidential election, in fact, any of the elections in Canada or the United States or whatever, was the talk of security, the talk of law enforcement, the talk of protecting the citizens. But besides that, how about protecting those politicians that are getting elected? This is a crazy, wacky world that we have, that we're living in right now. Barack Obama has been elected. He's the first black person to be elected into that role of president of the United States. And believe me, whether you're a crazy right-winger or just a plain and simple nut, the safety of the president is foremost and important on the minds of those that protect them. I thought I'd bring on Clint Van Sant. You know, Clint is a former FBI agent, author, security expert, to talk about keeping the president safe, keeping politicians safe, and then we'll get into some other topics. Hi, Clint.
Hey, good evening, Dana.
Nice to have you. You wrote an interesting article on Barack Obama. You know, this is something that I wasn't sure I'd see in my lifetime, or I'm not sure if you thought that way either, but history has been made. But there's also a very important job of protecting those that are making history. Let's talk about that.
Well, it is. And as you know, as far as the president, the vice president, and their families, that's the job in America, the Secret Service. So, you know, so they've got 5,000 plainclothes agents. Of course, they have the uniform division, too. But as far as those that actually travel with him, protect those president, vice president, and those families, that's an awful tough job. I mean, those men and women, as you well know, they have to be leaning forward in the saddle 24 hours a day, ready to respond in a second to, you know, some type of assassination attempt against the principal that they're protecting. You know, I mean, their job is to know what's going on, is to investigate, but also they're bullet catchers, and that's a terrible description. I'm supposed to take a bullet for you.
Well, laying your life on the line to protect others and to protect those in charge, for lack of a better term. You've had personal experience with the far right wingers, the cult guys, the whatever you want to call them. We're going to try and make this simple. It's a different ideology. It's a different human aspect that you're talking to out there. In fact, some would say they're not even human.
Well, it is. You know, I've gone up against the right wing in America before, and you know, a number of years ago, a group in Arkansas, right wing, neo-Nazi, paramilitary, religious survivalist group, heavily armed, and it. This was prior to the days of Waco, and as a hostage negotiator, I spent 4.5 days talking 85 men, women, and children out of a 300-acre compound. And when we got them out, Dana, we went in and searched the compound, and we found, you know, semi-automatic, fully automatic weapons, explosive devices, heavy machine guns. They were building an armored personal carrier. They had landmines. But we found a barrel of cyanide. And when I asked one of the members, what were you going to do with the cyanide? He said, well, we were going to take it to Chicago and put it in the water system to kill, his term for African Americans or blacks.
Right.
Well, you know, I mean, you're sitting there. Number one, you're thinking, what a terrible thing to do. Number two, you know that when you deal with chemicals, you know the solution to pollution is dilution. So the more water you have, no matter how much poison you have, it spreads it out or thins it out so much. But it probably wouldn't have done any good. But you're sitting there. I'm sitting there talking to these guys and thinking, well, I used to live in Chicago. I mean, there are whites, there are blacks, there are, you know, Hispanics, there are Asians. You know, how do these idiots think that the poison is going to differentiate between blacks and others? I mean, when you go up against that type of mentality, sometimes you think they're capable of just about anything.
Absolutely. Clint Van Zandt is here. We're talking safety. We're talking law and order. We're talking about protecting those that protect us. A historic moment, again, Barack Obama, the next president of the United States. You look at the current president of the United States, terribly low approval ratings, probably one of the most hated men around, whether you approve of what he's done or whether you don't approve of what he's done. And only 5,000 of those Secret Service agents that go out and do this job, that's amazing. Clint, when it comes down to this and the coordination between the CIA, FBI, Secret Service, local law enforcement, and what we see today as far as threats to our security. In fact, here just the other day, I believe both Barack Obama and John McCain's websites were hacked into by the Chinese. How much more coordination do we need? Obviously, it's got to be a combined effort.
Well, you know, unless we're willing to put the president in a bulletproof bubble, unless we're willing to swear him or her into office, lock him up in the White House, in the presidential residence, and never let him out, you know, even that doesn't do any good. Back in, I remember I was a younger FBI agent back in 1974, and a guy by the name of Sam Bike, his master plan was, he was going to hijack an airliner at the Baltimore-Washington airport, and in fact, he got into the plane, demanded that the pilots take off. They wouldn't do it, and he shot and killed them both. He couldn't figure out how to fly the plane.
Right, I remember.
And he committed suicide, but his master plan was to make that plane take off, and then Tom Clancy-like, long before Clancy ever wrote the book, crashed that plane into the White House so that he could kill Richard Nixon, who was the sitting president then. So, I mean, you know, they can come at you so many different ways. I guess in the reality that you and I and your listeners know, if somebody really wants to kill you, and if they're willing to either be arrested or die in the attempt, they've got a fairly good chance of pulling that off if they want to.
You know, the economy, of course, the war in Iraq somewhat, but the economy certainly took over the last election, whether it's on the state level, federal level, or worldwide level. What we didn't hear a lot about is what got George Bush elected, is protecting people. All we're hearing about now is the states that are broke, that are having to lay off policemen, that they shouldn't have given policemen the big raises that they got after 9/11, on and on and on, but we didn't hear much safety. This president, Barack Obama, I agree, will probably be tested. You know, when, who, what, where, why, I don't know. But are we ready, or has this become a more of a dollar issue and we're more worried about the economy than we are saving ourselves?
Well, the testing is going to come in a lot of different ways. It may come from international terrorism, but realize that 17 U.S. presidents were the target of attempted assassination attempts. And in fact, the last 7 U.S. presidents, to include twice against George Bush, all had either successful or attempted assassination against them. So if you say the last 7, 100% someone tried to assassinate them, if you take that level of fear and hatred and then you couple it with some type of racial bigotry and attach that to it, too. I mean, there are some that would suggest the chances of someone trying to go after the president-elect or when he becomes the president, just as these two skinheads we saw do within the last month, who were going to drive a car around the country, shoot blacks, and then ultimately their master plan was to kill Senator Obama at the time.
Right.
I mean, the chances appear to be probably 100% that somebody will make some type of attempt. I mean, it's just a statistical probability at this point without even factoring in all the other aspects of fear and race.
Clint Van Zandt's here. Clint, when we talk about numbers, law enforcement, whether it's on the federal level or local level or just down to the small sheriff's department or city police department, are terribly outnumbered. What do we do to talk to the politicians to get the people to realize that, you know, more taxes need to be paid? We need more cops on the street. It's not all about, you know, saying everything's going to be okay, because when the crap hits the fan, it's that cop on the street that's going to be there to help you.
Well, I mean, that is really the thin blue line. You know, we have so few law enforcement officers, really, when you look at the city, county, state, and federal level across America. I mean, we in law enforcement, they rely on the goodwill of the people. They rely on the intelligence of the people. They rely on the help in America, the help of the American people, that if you see something, if something doesn't look right, that you're going to pick up that phone and dial 911. And, you know, the challenges we have, both internal and external, I mean, there's just no reason in the world why we should ever consider reducing, I think, any country, reducing their law enforcement agencies. I mean, there's got to be a balance, of course, but, you know, here, if I'm not careful, I'll get up on my soapbox talking about the salaries that professional athletes make compared mm-hmm. to police officers and school teachers. I mean, you know, it just, things like that, just, you know, the people who do the most for us, who contribute the most to society, so many times get paid the less. And that's, you know, you find police officers having to hold down two jobs, their spouses having to hold down a job, just to try to keep a salary level enough so that they can pay their family. Now, you know, salaries have gone up over the years. Years ago, when I started the FBI, I was out of high school, and I started just as a clerical employee, not as a special agent. And I found a letter not too long ago that I had got from J. Edgar Hoover, Dana, welcoming me to the FBI at the salary of $2,900 a year. You know, at least those salaries have gone up some.
Oh, wow. That makes you want to start all over again, doesn't it, Clint?
Oh, yeah. Well, it dates me, too. But $2,900 a year with the privilege of serving your country. So, you know, thank you, Mr. Hoover.
Absolutely. I have my hand on my heart, Rich. Now, Clint Van Zandt is here. He's a former FBI agent. You know, Clint, usually when you and I talk, we talk about the high-profile cases that are in the news. And one of the high-profile cases that's in the news all the time is this little girl, Kaylee Anthony, that's been missing in Orlando. Mom's in jail. She's been indicted on murder charges, manslaughter, whatever, no body. We've got bounty hunters. We've got media people. We've got everyone involved in this case. But what we don't have is the little girl. Is we don't have the body. And I'm curious your thoughts on this. We haven't talked about this case for a while.
You know, I mean, this is real. This has been cut and dry for me, Dana, since day one. I mean, it's not, I've never seen it a big mystery. I mean, I was on the Today Show Saturday morning talking about this, and I was walking out. One of the cameramen said, you know, would you mind if I ask what you think exactly happened? I said, sure. I said, I think that this is a young woman who was a single mother, who, you know, she cared about sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and that it was a challenge for her being a single mother, and that somehow she picked up, unfortunately, like other young parents and young single parents on the internet, that one way you can ensure that your child will stay in bed and sleep all night is to use chloroform. And I said, I think what happened is, maybe not for the first time, that this young woman may have chloroformed her child, not because she wanted to kill the little girl, but because she, the mother, simply wanted to go out the night and not have the responsibility of either getting a babysitter or checking on how her daughter was doing. So I think she chloroformed her. I think she came back the next morning. The child had died of an overdose. The mother kind of did a little bit of a panic, but again, being a pathological liar that I think she is, and probably a budding sociopath, she thought about it for about a day. She put the body in the trunk of the car, figuring out what to do about it. As we know, the forensic tests have come back and suggested that for about 2.5 days, the body lay in the trunk and decomposed. And then she took that body out and buried it someplace. And she knows, like so many people you and I, Dana, ran into in our law enforcement career, that, you know, when you tell somebody you've got the right to remain silent, it always amazed me the people, and of course it was you and my job, to help them talk.
Yep.
But, you know, I'd sit there amazed, thinking to myself, if this guy kept his mouth shut, I could not make a case against him, even though I think he did it, but by his own admission, he's going to go to jail. Well, I think this young woman is smart enough to realize the one way you keep a secret is to do it yourself and tell nobody. And even now, when the question was asked of me yesterday on the Today Show, well, but what if all these hunters, these 2,000-3,000 volunteers led by Equisearch and led by this bounty hunter Leonard Padilla, who as another person in the list of people who drive me crazy, that are out there allegedly searching for this little girl. What if they actually find the body? Well, the reality is, after 5 months in Florida, the decomposition is probably going to be so great that it will be hard forensically to suggest what happened to that child. And even if they're able to, number one, any linking physical evidence that links that child to the mother, in most cases, is naturally going to be there because the mother was the caretaker. So law enforcement will still be challenged, if and when they find that little girl's body, is to say that the mother was ultimately responsible for what happened to that little girl. And I do not, having seen the mother and having seen the grandmother on TV, I don't expect there's going to be a Perry Mason moment where this young woman says, "Oh, I confess, I've got to get it off my chest. I have to say what I did." That's not going to happen. So the challenge from law enforcement, I think, is going to actually try to prove that the mother had anything to do with the death, and of course, we don't even know that child is dead yet, with the death of that child. And even little things like the mother abandoning the car for X number of days or a week before it was actually found. I mean, she could always come back and say, "Hey, I left the car somewhere else," or even if I abandoned it there, somebody else could have put a body in. I don't, you know, there is a lot that has to be proven, and even though many of us think we know what happened, the only one, as far as I'm concerned, that actually does is the person who was last with that child and last got rid of her. And I still think it's going to be a challenge to prove, to have a case where you can show a jury proof beyond a reasonable doubt that 21-year-old mother was responsible for the death of her child.
Absolutely. And we've looked at the case of babysitter in a bottle before on here when it comes to this story. But, Clint, the last question I've got for you is her attorney, Jose Baez, has come under some fire here recently for hugging his client in jail, for lack of a better term. That's exactly what he was doing. And I happened to see him on a cable news show last night, and the cable news host, a quite prominent host in the business, said, "Wow, I don't believe he's hugging her for any other reason than just to hug her. He's got a real hot wife." But when it comes down to this story and all the cast of characters that we have, and even a story of worrying about him hugging, and there, I understand that there's safety issues involved too. He could be passing or something, all that sort of stuff. But really, hasn't this case been reported to death?
It has been reported to death. You see TV shows like in the States with Nancy Grace doing this show, doing this story every night, and you say, "Wait a minute, this, just like the case in Aruba with Natalie Holloway, after the first week, the set of facts and the set of suspects really hasn't changed."
No.
There's really not a whole lot new, but night after night after night, we're spoon-fed the salacious details of this, and you've got guys like Leonard Padilla, this self-described, not only bounty hunter, but self-described as a media whore. I was on with him one night. I said, "Mr. Padilla, there's one thing for sure. I think you've got a good lock on who you are, you know? Media whore, that's exactly who you are." And the guy just grins about it because he's laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah.
So when I see people like him and others use this to try to get ratings, to try to make money, it's just kind of dirty, and it's just, you and I have to say, okay, let's take a step back. I'll talk about this, but I'll talk about it, hopefully, that we're going to get it to a conclusion.
Yep.
And we hope for the sake of everybody who's involved in this case and all the citizens who have volunteered because they want to bring closure and because, there, but for the grace of God, go one of my children or one of my grandchildren. And it's just to take that step back and look at the motive of everybody else who's been involved. And, you say that if it hasn't been for this television following, would the case have been handled different? And in the United States, we have, about 750,000 people that are reported missing every year, some of which never come back. And I get emails from people saying, "Hey, how come that little girl, or how come Natalie Holloway gets all the attention? What about my son, my daughter, my brother, my sister, my wife, who was missing, who was murdered? How come they don't get the attention? And, you know, the real answer is television decides who we should care about and who we shouldn't, and then they shove it down our throats until it's solved or we just can't take anymore.
Well said. Clint Van Zandt, thank you, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Dr. Clint Van Zandt, and he's right. Although I do disagree somewhat, you know, we all care. We all want to see Kaylee Anthony be found. We all want to see Jennifer Kessie and Natalie Holloway be found. But sometimes these cable news channels seem to report these stories to death. My name's Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We're going to be back in a minute with violence expert Susan Murphy Milano, and we're going to be talking about the Barbara Sheehan case and see what Susan has to say about the Anthony case a little bit later on. Mark Williams, he's the news director of WNDB Radio, Tim Miller, the director of Texas Equisearch, and Drew Kessie, whose daughter is missing in the Orlando area, will be here. We'll be right back.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. You'll know my next guest, Susan Murphy Milano, is the author of the book Moving Out, Moving On, When a Relationship Goes Wrong. It's available on Amazon.com. I'm not trying to rhyme tonight. I'm just telling you where you can get a real good book. Of course, she is a domestic violence expert. Her own mother was taken from her by her police officer father, who then committed suicide, and Susan has dedicated her life to helping others. Susan, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you for having me on, Dana.
I wanted to get a couple of updates from you on some cases you're working on. And then a little bit later on, I want to talk to you about some cases that are in the news right now. Amy Mullins, you and I were just talking off air. There's some news on that. Let's hear it.
The verdict came in on Thursday morning. Stephen Mullins was convicted, found by a jury guilty for the death of Amy Mullins.
Great.
Who was his wife. You know, this is typical. I mean, she wanted a divorce, as we see in these cases, and he wasn't going to let her go. He was the only person that the police were looking at. The sad part is that there's a 16-year-old daughter, Kaylis Mullins, who is just, you know, beside herself. I actually spoke to her today, and we talked about how difficult it is. You know, her mom's never going to be there to help her with her homework or bake her favorite meal or be there for her at a prom or when she graduates high school. We don't think about those things. We might take them for granted. But a mother and daughter relationship is beyond words. And, you know, I tried to talk to her about, just remember, your mother lives in your heart, always. I said, even for me, after all these years, I was talking to Robin Sachs, my partner in Justice Interrupted, just the other day, and I said, where's my Mondo bread? Because my mother made Mondo bread, and this is the season for it, and they can get it better. It's better out in California than it is in Chicago, and I asked her to send me a shipment of it.
Yeah.
After all these years, there's that warmth and love and comfort of something that reminds me of my mother that around this time of year I still want. And you know, when our loved ones are killed and taken away from us in a way that isn't anticipated by somebody who is our father, and in this case with Amy Mullins as well, you know, her daughter Kayla, it's very difficult. And people shouldn't, when something happens to someone that they know and that they love, they shouldn't act like they have the plague. They should not walk away. They should continue to speak to them and try to be with them and not expect that person to hurry up and get over it like a cold. Oh, you know, it's been enough time. Well, you don't know how much time it is. In crime, when you're a victim, the time doesn't ever go away. You're always oozing at some level, you know, even after 20 years.
Yeah, after 20 years, after 30 years, after whatever. Susan, when you talk about a 16-year-old girl and the connection to her mother, there's also that psychological aspect of it, of her having to go through this. Yes, you lose your mother. You could lose your mother in a traffic accident, but you lose your mother in a graphic, horrific way like this. And we look at the future of this young child. She's going to need a lot of help.
She is, but she's also going to need people to understand. She's you know, every time someone looks at her, if she remains in the community, they're always going to point to her and say, well, that's the girl that father killed the mother and stuck her in a freezer.
Right.
That shouldn't be. That she is a person and she has the ability to start over and start a new life. If we look at, regardless of the Drew Peterson boys, which is a good example,
mm-hmm.
they forever will have to live with that. Oh, those are the Peterson boys. You know, they need to consider at some level when they get to a certain age, because their mother was murdered by whomever, she was still murdered. And that's a horrific loss for those boys. And you can't always point to them, and that's their claim to life is that crime. They're a human being. They do need a lot of support. They do need people around them, and they're going to have difficulty. They're going to be, you know, they may run and from their demons, and that means sometimes never feeling grounded. When you lose someone to a crime like that, you feel as if your feet are not walking on the ground. And when my parents first died, a therapist had said to me, a psychologist who was working with children, she said, I'm going to sew some marbles in the bottom of your cuffs of your pants. I said, for what? She said, well, we do that with little kids who have traumas. They don't feel like they're grounded. So to make you feel like you're grounded and you're there, we're going to do that for a while. And I did it. And it did make me feel like there was some weight, because you don't feel like you're on the ground. You don't feel like you're present.
If you're just tuning in, Susan Murphy Milano is here. You'll know her from the radio program Justice Interrupted and all her work with violence victims. Barbara Sheehan is another case that when I see these cases and read about them, Susan, they make my blood boil, not only because I'm a human and a talk show host, but I'm also in law enforcement. And there seems to be more of these stories coming forward, and they just shouldn't happen, but sadly they are.
Well, if you think of an officer who is going on to the force, he is trained. He is trained to defend himself, to help the public. So you take those tools when an officer sees a horrific crime of a child or a murder on the streets. And there is really no place for an officer across this country to go and say, I need help, because they are looked upon as weak when they say, I need help. Their partner doesn't see them as whole, or somehow they feel that way. And what happens is that the wives of officers across the country, and this is debatable, but to this date, there is no real resource for police officers' wives except to have a game plan that is like a war plan. And what has to happen is there has to be an avenue for police officers' wives that is safety, where she can seek an order of protection, where she can get out safely. Because you see in all of these cases, there is no way for her to get assistance. It doesn't matter. People can argue about this all day long. The fact is, these women are dying, and that's proof enough that the system is broken, that the weaponry and the arsenal and the fear factor that officers who are abusive put on their families is beyond most people's comprehension. They bring the streets home with them, the ones who are violent, and they make their victim their prisoner. So in my opinion, when Barbara Sheehan took two guns and emptied them into her husband, the only place in the bathroom when he was shaving that he wasn't near his arsenal, because he kept knives and guns and bullets and all kinds of artillery right there by the nightstand. And that's not uncommon. And it was the only time he wasn't prepared, he wasn't on guard. She knew that it was going to be him or her.
Yeah.
If it had been the other way around, it was no big deal. But because this is a woman that did it, we might look at it differently. We might say it's battered woman syndrome. It is not battered woman syndrome. It is officer violence, period. She didn't have a way out. And I had said on a blog that I wrote, if I shut my eyes, because the interview with Good Morning America was last week on Monday morning, and I watched it, I played it again, I shut my eyes, I felt like my mother was talking.
Right.
I don't advocate violence at all, and that's not a way to save things. I remember when I was a kid, there was a knock at the door. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning. My father hadn't been home yet, and lights were going off, and my mother looked at me and said, I wonder if this is the moment, meaning that she thought somebody was coming to the door to tell her that my father had been killed in the line of duty. It wasn't. It was the gas man, because the pipe had broken. When she shut the door, she sigh of relief, and she said, you know, I don't know if I still care, because we weren't living in a good environment. She said, but for a moment I thought maybe there was hope. My mother had hoped that something would have happened so that she could get out of it, because there was no way for her to leave. Had she had the courage to try to do something, perhaps, you know, she would still be alive today. Again, I don't advocate violence, but in my opinion, and this is from cases I've worked on, people I've been with, funerals I've been to, situations I've seen, case documents, files, transcripts, I don't believe that she had a way out. I do not believe that. I saw some of these police officer sites, and a lot of them were saying, you know, it's kind of a toss-up. And a lot of officers, which I was glad to see, said, you know what, she did what she had to do because there was no place for her to go. There isn't a place for these women to go. Just like Stacey Peterson, just like Kathleen Savio. Two good examples. There wasn't a place for them to go. I'm not saying that Peterson is guilty of committing murder. I am just pointing out and making an observation of the facts.
And an obvious observation of the facts is, as a victim, as a female victim, and let's face the facts, ladies and gentlemen, the majority of victims in these sorts of cases are female. But when a hubby is wearing a badge and wearing a gun, and it's his friends that are coming over to investigate your claim, your cry for help, it's got to be hugely difficult. But having a dresser drawer or a closet full of weapons, and you think that that weapon is going to be used on you sometime, the mental aspect of that just must be incredible.
You know, my mother was, Barbara Sheehan, 47 years old. My mother was 47 years old when she was murdered. That's not very old. And, you know, when these guys retire, as did Barbara Sheehan's husband, and they don't have anything else to do, what they do is they start making their wives or their girlfriends kind of the prey. They play. They play this sick psychological game with them. My mother had gone back to work. My father was stalking her. He was following her around. When we tried to get a police report made at the time, they laughed and said, you're crazy, you know, there's nothing we can do. And where is the recourse? Like I said, he's armed, he has arsenal, he knows how to use it. And these men who are abusive will say, whether you wear a badge or you don't, I will be able to do this and get away with it. And for a police officer, many times, that's what's happened. They can get away with it because they know how to do it, or they think that they do, because they're trained in that way. Where is her training? Where's her training when he explodes? Why don't the Fraternal Order of Police across the country, why don't they put a program in place or mandate it through every single police department that when he goes through that training, a year after they're married, she goes through a training? Because she has to learn how to defuse the bomb. If she's in a viral relationship and she's got to get out, she really has to take extraordinary measures to leave safely. And that doesn't often mean with their life. My parents were divorced 6 months, and it still happened, because they won't let them go. That's their property. How dare they? That's their control. That's their manipulation. If I can't have you, no one can. And that is the same theme song, whether you are a law enforcement officer who is abusive, and whether you are just ordinary Peter person who is, I don't want to say Joe the plumber, Peter person who is, say, you know, just walking in the street.
I know. No, I know exactly what you're saying. Susan Murphy Milano is here. She's a violence expert, author, and part of the Justice Interrupted radio show. Susan, when you look at these cases, again, and we're dealing with abusive police officers, stories come and stories go, but we keep hearing about them. You have to wonder why, in a line of work like police work, with the divorce rate so high, why there isn't, and you've mentioned this briefly, why there isn't some compulsion or a responsibility for those police chiefs, cities, counties, towns, whatever, to have training for both husbands and wives so this sort of stuff doesn't happen. It's tough to be married to a cop. I grew up in it. My mother and father married for over 40 years. My father, a police officer, for 37 of those. And, you know, sometimes it was interesting growing up.
You have to have legal remedies in place, first and foremost, which you do not. An order of protection or a shelter will not prohibit the violence. He knows where the shelters are. The order of protection for a police officer's wife, in my opinion and my observation, is worthless. You've angered him. You've embarrassed him. A lot of times a supervisor will come over after they've received a call for an incident, and he'll say to the police officer's wife, you know, why don't you cool off. We'll talk about it in the morning. You don't want him to lose your job. You've got a house mortgage here.
Yeah.
You've got payments to be made. You've got children to be raised. He'll get over it. You know, this isn't a bad cough again or a flu. He won't get over it. In the case of David Brown, who was police chief in Tacoma, Washington, in April of 2003, before he was police chief, every one of those officers knew he was violent. Every one of those officers knew he had a problem, yet he was still promoted to the chief of police, yet he still murdered Crystal Brown. He killed himself, killed her. She was in a coma for a couple of weeks. Now her father, Lane Judson, has a foundation. He goes all across the country advocating change, mandating that there are certain programs and protocols in place. But that isn't enough. It's a start, but it isn't enough because everybody's not on the same party page, meaning that the powers that be across the country are not understanding the epidemic, and this is an epidemic, and it's going to continue to get worse. So should a Barbara Sheehan be not accountable? No, no one's saying that she shouldn't be accountable. Should she do time for this? She's already done time by being married to somebody like this, by being married to someone who terrorized her, no different than in a third world country. People say, well, she could have walked out, she could have done this, she could have done that. No, she couldn't.
Yeah.
People say that Stacey Peterson or a Kathleen Savio or a Crystal Brown, they couldn't leave because these men would not let them leave. In Barbara Sheehan's case, I believe it's the same situation. She could not leave. So she is the product of an environment. She did what she had to do to survive, and it was the only way that she knew how. And in the interview, when her daughter sat next to her in the chair, there was this relief. And Barbara Sheehan didn't care whether she would be in prison because she had lived in prison, and anything was better than where she lived.
Wow, you know, and it's blood on the badge no matter how you look at it. I want to get into your radio show a little bit, Justice Interrupted. You, Robin Sachs, and the other gal that we all know, Stacey Dietrich. When you talk about cases, and I'm going to talk about the Anthony case, and it's a case where justice just hasn't come forward yet, but you look at it and you wonder, will this case ever be solved? Has justice been served? Justice is served in many different ways. I'd like to get your thoughts on what's going on now with that case and put a plug in for your radio show.
I think it's a continuation of a mudslinging at the expense of a crime victim who is only 3 years old.
That's a good point, yeah.
You know, and that's nobody's advocating for the child. And that's a sad reality of our world. You've got a child who, you know, everybody's about me, but what about the child? What about, I don't want to see, you know, this cowboy Padilla, you know, raising the ante on different things and going out and doing things. I don't want to see anybody's lawyer arguing with anyone. I don't want to see, and it's psychological warfare in the media, as far as I'm concerned, when you put the lawyer on with Nancy Grace and you try to talk about issues and points that don't make any sense because people are manipulating it.
Yep.
The fact is, again, a child has died. She's 3 years old. And somebody knows something. And that's got to change. We have to have more accountability. We have to be able to not, you know, I have a problem with how or what auspices the defense attorney operates under. Again, this is a mother of a child who doesn't seem to care about a child.
No.
Two grandparents who are very torn. One's a nurse, Cindy Anthony, and George is a police officer.
Ex-cop, yeah.
They just have to be talking at them, and they shouldn't be on trial, or they shouldn't even have to have a lawyer for what their daughter allegedly did to the grandchild. Again, I don't see a lot of people out there for the little girl. I don't see that. I don't hear it, and I'm saddened by that because she didn't have a voice when she was born, obviously, and she didn't have one when she died. And to scream and yell at everybody doesn't make any sense. Let's put some closure on this thing. Hopefully in Florida the prosecutors have enough evidence to just go ahead and charge the case and move forward.
Well, they have. There's an indictment, and it's going to go forward, but it just seems like there's that nonstop 24/7 news cycle that has grabbed onto this story and keeps going and going and going with it.
And what about all the other children? What about, you know, if we look at the Hudson case and Julian Hudson, who was 7 years old, if he had not been the relative of Jennifer Hudson, you wouldn't have heard a peep of, about the fact that he was missing and they couldn't find him.
Probably
That's
not.
That's the sad reality. Tomorrow night on, pardon me, on Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Central Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time, we're going to be having a woman on who heads up a group called Peas in Their Pods, which does things for children of color because there isn't a system in place for them when they go missing or something happens to them. We're also going to have on Kalis, who is the daughter of Amy Mullins, because she had to testify at the trial.
Yeah.
And we're going to just get her thoughts before sentencing, which isn't until December. Then we're going to have some other guests on as well. But we don't have a fairness in how these cases are covered, how they're reported. And what we do at Justice Interrupted is the victims come first in my mind. And pardon me, I don't care if you're Larry King. I would put the victim on first and foremost, or their family, before a personality, because that's why we're here. We're here for the victim. And we have been able to make a lot of headway with a couple of cases. We're either not able to talk about them because they're ongoing and the person who is suspected of the crime hasn't been arrested. This is not about wearing a badge about how many we've captured or how many we've solved or who we've helped. This is about getting the word out. Billboards are very effective. Word of mouth, churches, school. People need to use those resources. And that's what Justice Interrupted has become, is become the catalyst and the media outlet, basically, for the word to get it out for these crime victims and their families, and to also help them with resources so these cases are solved.
That's well said. And what I'd like to see is my angels, you three, get leather jackets like John Walsh, and you can go out there and kick some ass for sure.
I don't think that we need to do that. I think that, and I am very honored to be with Stacey Sitrich and Robin Sachs. I mean, you couldn't have a better combination, a prosecutor, police officer. You do the intro for the show, which makes it all the better because it fires us up before we go on. And it is very important because we have, all three of us have different perspectives, and we don't always agree on certain cases.
Yeah.
In certain situations, we have different opinions. But when, at the end of the day, when we look at these cases and investigate some of them that we do, we are able to be objective about it. If there's a situation that might involve something that I might have a problem with, I back away and they do it, and vice versa. There's a case in LA that Robin can't take, then Stacey and I do it. That's the beauty of this, because we're not always going to agree. We're not always going to be, you know, point on some of these things. But we have a heart. And like I said, we want to help people and get their loved ones home to them, which, you know, in a couple of cases, I'm glad to say we've been able to do successfully.
Well, you're doing a great job, and you're always welcome here. Thank you.
Thank you.
See you, Susan. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Susan Murphy Milano, violence expert and host of the talk show Justice Interrupted. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name is Dana Pretzer. We're going to be back in just a minute with Drew Kesey. His daughter Jennifer has been missing, also in the Orlando, Florida area.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, as we're waiting to get hold of Drew Kesey, I sat down with Mark Williams, the news director of WNDB AM radio and a regular on the Nancy Grace Show today to talk about the Anthony case and what he's been hearing. We'll listen to that interview and then come back hopefully with Drew Kesey. All right, we're back with an update on the search for Kaylee Anthony. Is Mark Williams. Of course, you know him as the news director of WNDB and a regular on the Nancy Grace Show. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me back, Dana.
This week has been a lot about George Anthony. In my opinion, we found out what George Anthony is really like. I actually felt bad for the guy. Hearing some of the reports and some of the tapes that the police have released brings a lot of people to a new understanding of George, even though even today he's going to say he's looking for Kaylee alive and well.
Yeah, I mean, we saw a different side of George Anthony, one that we haven't seen at all in those interviews. He talks about going and driving the car home and first off, getting the car out of Casey's car out of the impound lot mm-hmm. at a tow service and opening up the trunk and saying under his breath, as the smell of death hits him, saying, please, don't let this be little Kaylee, my little Kaylee. And all they saw back there was a basketball-sized stain on the carpet. He drove it home. The wife comes out, Cindy, comes out into the garage. She says, what's that smell? Then she counteracts herself. She says, that is the pizza, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, of course, George says, yes. But in that interview, he got so he got so wound up. He got himself physically ill, and they had to stop the interview because he was up-trucking all over the place. I mean, it has really affected him. And even though he puts on the brave face that Kaylee is still alive, he knows deep down in his heart that Kaylee is no longer with us, and he's not only lost a granddaughter, but a daughter as well.
Absolutely, I agree. And the persona that we see in the media is I don't know if it's an act of desperation or if it's just a grandfather that's holding out hope. But, Mark, you've been in the business a long time. I've been in law enforcement a long time and doing this radio thing for quite some years, and I've never seen as much evidence, as much audio, as much print material being released in a case like this. The George Anthony one, for example, a jury should be hearing that. I'm not sure if the public should have been hearing that right away. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, the authorities very rarely release their interviews, especially taped interviews that they had with individuals. This is a very extreme case, very unusual case.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens. Casey Anthony goes on trial for first-degree murder on January 5th. None of us here in town think that will ever happen. If it's not pleaded out, it's going to be a lot later in 2009, probably a year from now, before she even sees a courtroom.
I have to agree, and you've got to wonder what's going on with the attorneys, Jose Baez, etc. In fact, I saw Jose Baez on, I think it was Geraldo's program last night, somewhat defensive when he was asked a simple question about being reprimanded by the jailer for hugging his client. Is there anything new on that?
No, there's not. I mean, he is a very defensive guy. He's a little thin-skinned from what we could see sometimes.
Yeah.
The deal is that twice over the past couple of weeks, he has been told not to hug Casey when they meet because there's a security problem there. You being in law enforcement, Dana, you know what the deal is.
Yep.
is that they could be passing things between them. I mean, obviously that's probably not the case, but they don't want to let any chance take place that there is something going between them.
And he has to follow rules. He's no different than anyone else.
Of course. One thing I've got to say about in his defense is the fact that even though he's only been practicing three and a half years, he has no current reprimands on the books at all.
Mm-hmm.
There have been some things in his jacket, but nothing to write home about, nothing to have his law license lifted or anything like that. I mean, this guy basically handled drunks and drunk drivers before he got involved with this.
Well, he certainly jumped into a case with both feet here. As you know, and as we're recording this, we're actually recording this Sunday afternoon for the live Sunday night show, that there is a huge search going on right now, working with the people at Texas Equisearch, looking for Kaylee Anthony and Jennifer Kessie both. I'm going to be interviewing Jennifer's dad a little bit later on. We're hearing some reports of bones being found, and the same old, I guess, and I'm thinking Tim Miller, who I will also interview today sometime, is probably just wanting to concentrate on the search, and all these little distractions that seem to pop up must be terribly frustrating for him.
Well, it is. Yesterday or Saturday, they had about 1,300 searchers out there. They thought they were going to have 5,000, but 1,300 people showed up. They were processed through, and they had at least 130 areas to look at, and they were putting them in one-mile grids. They found some bones yesterday, turned out to be animal bones. Today, only about 600 people showed up, and many of those showed up after church services. Some of the faith-based organizations in Central Florida came out to help, and they only had about 600 people helping. And again, concentrating in areas, and again, finding remains of animals, because animals die in the woods. But one thing that Tim Miller said is the fact that we don't have to search those areas again. They've already been searched and they've been cleared.
It's got to be frustrating, because I know Tim Miller, I think, fairly well enough to know that when he gets into something, he goes in 125%. And to not have the cooperation, this could end really easy. You know, Casey Anthony could make a phone call and say something if she knows, and this search could finish right away. Your experience as a news person where you are, have you ever seen a story like this as much, I guess, interest, and then when it comes down to something like this big search, as much apathy?
Yeah, and boy, you hit it on the head. I've never seen anything like this. I didn't think this would have the legs that it has. It not only has legs in our area in particular, but across the nation, and as well as, like, in the Pacific Rim nations. I had a friend of mine who saw me on the tube, and he was in a bar in Singapore. So the deal is, this thing is worldwide now. But, you know, one of the reasons that the people didn't come out is they know that Kaylee's gone.
Yeah.
But and they're not looking for somebody live anymore, even though George Anthony and Jose Padilla, or Jose Baez, rather, say that she's alive. She's not alive. I can guarantee you that.
You made a good point, and just before I let you go, Mark Williams is here. He's the news director for WNDB Radio, and he's also a regular on the Nancy Grace Show. I want you to go over one more time with me, and we can discuss it a little bit. The talk, the office talk, what you're hearing from your sources, whatever, that you don't think Casey Anthony will go to trial, that there'll be some kind of deal dealt. It's certainly something to think about.
It is, and when the grand jury came down 2 weeks ago with this indictment, the 7-count indictment, the first one, the heaviest one, was first degree murder against Casey Anthony. Okay, but they did leave themselves a loophole with manslaughter. If they find a body, it will be, or the remains, and they're confirmed that they're little Kaylee's, she'll get first degree murder. If not, I think they're probably going to do manslaughter. And Leonard Padilla, the other day, I did a talk show Friday afternoon. Substituted for a regular host, and I had Leonard Padilla on the air, and he told me that, you know, really, when it comes right down to it, the most thing that they could find her with is disposing of a corpse not in a proper way.
Well, it will be interesting for sure, and again, I hate using the term closure, Mark, but it's, you know, we need to find that child to bring some closure to the family, and it's not just George and Cindy and Lee. I'm sure there are other family members that are wanting some answers too. Anyway, I always appreciate your time on the show. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, and the other part of closure, of course, is the general public.
Yep.
who have been holding on to the stain, hoping for something to pop up, like a live little girl or somebody. And it's not going to be the case. That's why we all need closure on this.
Yep, absolutely. Well said. Thank you, sir.
Okay, Dana, take care. Thank you for having me.
Okay, bye-bye. That's Mark Williams, news director for WNDB. There isn't a person that listens in my audience or that's involved with my show or Scared Monkeys or whatever that wouldn't say that it would be a miracle to find Kaylee Anthony or Jennifer Kissi alive. But we all know reality sets in, and that's probably not going to happen. We need to get as many people down there volunteering for the search as we can. I think some promises were made that weren't kept, but regardless, we need to get as many people down there to help as we can, because what's important, it's not important that I'm doing a show, or it's not important that somebody else is doing whatever. What's important is finding these two missing people. That's the most important thing. My name's Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
Okay, I have to apologize for those of you that were waiting to hear Drew Kissi. Of course, Jennifer Kissi has been missing in the Orlando area for some time now, and all you have to do is just Google her name or look at the link on the show notes to find out more about that. I'm having phone problems getting a hold of Drew, and I've tried several different ways to get him, and I wasn't able to. However, I have sat down with Tim Miller, the director of Texas Equisearch, a little while ago to find out just what the heck's going on in the search for Kaylee Anthony, we're hearing and reading all sorts of reports, a lot of them speculations. Some may be true, some may not be. We're hearing of a search that will begin tomorrow. I sat down with Tim and I asked him just what the heck's going on. Remember, Texas EquiSearch is a volunteer organization that goes out looking for those that are missing. They work their butts off trying to help those families who aren't able to help themselves. And I get really annoyed when I hear them being criticized, so I wanted to go right to the director of EquiSearch, a regular guest on this program, to find out what's going on in the search for Kaylee Anthony. And here's what Tim Miller had to say. Tim Miller is here from Texas EquiSearch, and I thought I would go right to him to find out what's going on in the search for Kaylee Anthony and Jennifer Kessie. Welcome, Tim.
Hi, Dana. It's a pleasure again. We've been very, very busy, as everybody knows.
I understand that. There's been lots of speculation, obviously, on the Internet. It's too bad because most of it is wrong. Most of it isn't coming from you. But we're really curious what's going on in the search for Kaylee Anthony and Jennifer Kessie.
You know what? We're still searching. We're out there. I myself was out in water today doing sonar equipment along with other stuff. I was in the air yesterday looking at some things. We had a little over 1,400 people yesterday, a little over 800 today, and the turnout wasn't nearly as big as I thought that it was going to be. You know, we're a little bit disappointed, but I think the most disappointment is that it is a frustration of not being able to find Kaylee.
Right.
Kaylee's story has touched and broken the hearts of everybody in America, and when you're here right on the front line and you see all the dedication and all the people and all the real tears, it's just a heartbreaking story. And you know, you take it so personal, and you remember the cases that you did go ahead and find them and start second-guessing your own self on them. My God, what have we done wrong? What can we do different? And it's just pretty hard to face reality at times for all of us in many different situations. But you know what? I think that reality is, and this is just coming from me, is that Kaylee will never be found alive and will never be found dead. I think she's going to be one of them that's going to be moved to our missing person page with just a few hundred other ones that will never, ever be found. And it's very, very sad. And I know we sound discouraged right now, and reason being is that we are. You know, we put so much effort into this, so much money into this, and you know, got a family that helped us before down here, and 2 weeks after they helped us, her own sister disappeared in North Carolina. And she was out here today just begging us, please come to North Carolina. And we got, you know, four cases opening up there now. So we're at that point that we're gonna search through tomorrow, load everything up, go directly to North Carolina, try to sort this one out. And when we need to come back and can be effective, I mean, nobody wants to quit this search.
Okay.
Nobody wants to do it. So I think there's a lack of interest in many local people because they have just lived this so long. And, I mean, it's just consumed them. And I think many locals are at that point of just trying to put their life back together and move forward and accept the fact that they're just going to have back out of it until the trial. But, you know, more than anything in the world, Dana, we wanted to just find that little body out there and bring it home and let this community have some type of closure and, of course, Kaylee, the dignity that she deserves. And I want to drag on and drag on and bore people, but you know, I remember going to the very first conference in Washington, D.C. of Mr. Florida Children, and President Bush opened up and saying our children only make up 25% of our population, but 100% of our future, and it just sticks with me, and Kaylee's one of them that's not going to be part of our future, and it's sad, and sad it's happened to begin with, and it's sad to face reality that there is a very, very strong possibility, no matter what efforts are going to be brought in, no matter how much money and resources and stuff are spent, that this little girl is probably never going to be found.
Okay, Tim, I got a couple more questions for you, and I'll let you go because I know you're really busy, and I appreciate your time. So what I'm understanding, if you could clarify for me, that tomorrow is one more day, and then at that time you plan to, I guess, suspend the search. I'm not going to say close it. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're going to suspend it, Dana. We just have not been fair to our donors and to the other families out there that really need us to just use up every single resource we have to that. To the point that we may not have the resources to even help these families, and it's just not fair to the other families. It's not fair for our donors to donate to help all these families across America, and all of it goes just to one family and one person, and unfortunately we don't know how much is even appreciated there when other families are begging for it. And I really got angry 2 days ago because we had our credit cards floating out all over the place. People were buying stuff and stuff that we needed out here. And if any, everybody knows, you use your credit card too much and they put a freeze on it because they think maybe it was stolen. And so all three cards had a freeze on them. And I was moving so fast that I called the bank and that and told them, hey, nobody stole them. We're using them. And it ended up at that time there was an additional $32,000 in a short period of time.
Wow.
That was put on them, and it was for flying people in motels, rental cars, all the things that we rented out here. And I said, damn, now we're at $76,000 on this, and it's just not fair, I feel as though there's one person out there that could have brought this to a close a long, long time ago.
Absolutely.
And we wouldn't have to be here. And then I just had to step back and take a few deep breaths and stuff and say, we can't give up. This is about Kaylee. It's not about anybody else. It's not Kaylee's fault. I just get choked up thinking about ever walking away from this case and never want to come back, but it's just time that we take care of these other families.
Last question, Tim. I'm going to be interviewing Drew Kessie a little bit later on. I'd like to get a quick comment on that. And there are a couple of what I consider to be amateur bloggers who are out there saying that there's going to be a water search tomorrow, that they've tried it with you, and now they're going to go out and do it on their own. Do you care to comment on that?
I'm hearing it first hand right now from you.
Okay.
I don't listen to the bloggers. I tell everybody out there, if it does not come out of my office, out of my mouth, I do not believe other things that people are saying. And, there's been a lot of things said that just are not true. You're right. There's a lot of amateur bloggers and amateur photographers and amateur something that have some motives that are far different than what our motives are. Our motives are strictly to find Haley, to find Jennifer, to find these other ones. I don't know how to even understand what some of these people have in their mind, and some people are very, very bored with their life, I guess, and trying to make something, get some attention somehow or another, whether it's even negative attention, at least they're getting some. So,
yep.
We could turn that energy around to a positive way and have the bloggers out here helping on this search and doing something positive and, see what all these people are going through and seeing the real true emotions and, maybe that changed some of the blogs.
Yeah, I hope so. Anyway, Tim, thank you.
Thanks, Dana.
Take care. Bye-bye. Tim Miller, obviously distraught as far as what's going on. And I think he said it best. Believe it if it comes out of his office and his mouth. I'm Dana Pretzer. We'll be right back. And we are right back. And I know some of you will find that interview somewhat disappointing. I know some of you will find that interview anger you because you may have contributed to the search to help find Kaylee, Anthony. I don't think Tim Miller said that they are done. I believe he told me both on and off air that they will work till tomorrow afternoon, and then I think he's heading to North Carolina, but he hopes to be back. But he stated his opinion that he thinks that Kaylee will be one of those missing that's not found alive or not found dead. I hope he's wrong. I hope he is wrong. I hope, and I don't give a damn who it is. It could be Donald Duck in short pants. They could go out and find Kaylee Anthony, the body of her, or if there was an absolute miracle, Kaylee Anthony alive, or Jennifer Kesey, or Natalie Holloway, or whoever. But what I think is very troublesome, what I think is very annoying, what I think is very disappointing, is these cases and how they have spun certain directions, and all of a sudden the finger of blame gets pointed at persons. The finger of blame should be pointed at one person only in the case of Kaylee Anthony being missing, and a judge should decide what's going to happen to that person. Let due process of law take place, but don't point fingers at Tim Miller or whoever. Don't try to benefit from a case like this by making it more for you than what it is for anyone else. If you sincerely want to help, then help. And like I said, if it's Donald Duck in short pants, Mickey Mouse, or Elvis Presley that finds these people, great, fantastic. I hope I'm wrong. But if someone is going to only try to cover their butt by continuing on and really not accomplishing anything, then it's going to be very disappointing for all involved. I'm sure the people at Texas EquiSearch, Scared Monkey, wherever, are doing what they can to help. I'm sure that the Leonard Padillas out there are doing what they can to help. But you got to be on the same team. You got to be on the same team. I don't like all the cameras and the video and that kind of stuff, yet here I am talking about it. And I think maybe if a judge does come out with a gag order, that might be a good thing in this case, because this case does need to be solved. Anyway, that's it. That's tonight's show. My name's Dana Pretzer. We'll see you again real soon here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
Been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.